Welcome to Calling All Bank Directors. This is David Barris, President of the American Association of Bank Directors. Our topic today is the new CRA regulation. What does it say and what has changed from the old rule? And what are some of the misconceptions that are arising from the interpretations of the new rule? This is the first of two podcast episodes on the new regulation. We are fortunate to have Ken Thomas, President and CEO of Community Development Fund Advisors, to discuss the new rule. Ken is the author of the seminal work on CRA and is a leading national expert on the subject. He taught at Wharton Business School 42 years and also serves on AABD's advisory board. All right, let's call Ken.
Thank you for joining us on Calling All Bank Directors.
Well, thank you for having me, and I could not think of a better venue than to work with you all, being associated with AABD for so long.
Thank you. And we're going to cover a very important subject, and you know something about it. It's a CRA, final rule, and you've been through this process probably many, many times. And I have to say, in my humble opinion, you are the leading expert in the country on CRA, and no one has taken that away from you. So we welcome you with a lot of enthusiasm today to discuss the some aspects of the final rule. Now, because of the subject, we're going to have two parts to the episode. So the first part will be on what the new rule says and what has changed. And then the second piece is going to be on what to do about the CRA final rule. Let's start with comments you might have on the key takeaways on the final rule. How could you summarize these takeaways? What's important to your banks?
Well, thank you very much, David. And you mentioned I'm enthusiastic about CRA. I've been involved with it since day one, literally 1977. I had the honor of knowing and working with Senator Proxmire, and most importantly, working with Gene Ludwig in the Comptroller's Office on the 95 regs, which we use today. And also, I've been on the board of a bank for over 20 years. But all of that enthusiasm is all positive. But I have to say, I do not have any of that enthusiasm when it comes to this new final rule. I will start by saying, number one, being in banking for nearly 50 years, actually teaching for as long as that, this is without a doubt the single most complicated and complex regulation that's ever existed in American banking, bar none. I'm talking about every capital, liquidity, BSA, every possible regulation, holding companies, banks, thrift, MHCs, nothing has come close to this. And it's very, very quantitative, very difficult to understand. Now, the good news is some banks are exempt, and they purposely, the ABN, the regulators, we'll talk more about that later, they decided to exempt small banks, which means they get to keep the existing small bank lending test, which is really four simple ratios. But what they did, which was very clever of them, and it was really the Federal Reserve more than anyone else, they're behind this, they decided to raise the minimum size of a small bank. They increased it quite a bit from where it was around $360 million up to $600 million. By going up to $600 million, they now encompass 2/3 of all the banks in the United States. Now, as percentage of assets, it's very small, but in numbers, which accounts in voting power and people in Congress that you know, it's very important. And we know from the credit union industry that numbers are very important, sometimes much more important than size. And so 2/3 of the industry is going to be effectively exempt under this new rule because they can now have this existing test. And that means about 800 plus banks that were previously intermediate small banks that were in that range that went up to about 1.5 billion. They are now going to be considered, these intermediate banks will be considered small banks. So we have a much broader area of small banks. That's a big advantage. Now, the disadvantage is if you are an intermediate bank, which is now going to be $600 million up to $2 billion, or a large bank, $2 billion and over, it gets increasingly complex. And the most complex and the most difficult burden is on the very large banks over $10 billion. So they actually created a new category, which we can call very large. It used to be small, intermediate, large. Now it's small, intermediate, large, and very large over $10 billion. The burden on the banks over $10 billion is so severe that Mickey Bowman, the only banker on the Federal Reserve, and dare I say the only one with common sense on these regs, she opposed it when it came out on October 24th and said it was creating unintended consequences and undue regulatory burden, especially on the banks over $10 billion. So this is part of the problem with this regulation to start with. If we look at it by size of bank, the smaller banks, those under $600 million, will be pretty much safe harbored. The ones from $600 to $2 billion will have a new retail lending test, which will be difficult, complicated. But the banks over $2 billion will have a totally new regime of community development and retail tests we can talk about, but they get very complicated.
Well, tell us about the misconceptions about the final rule. I'm sure there have been, given the confusion that the rule, because of the way it's been written, has created. So tell us about the misconceptions.
Sure. Well, the first one is the banks that are going to be under $600 million, I mentioned they have safe harbored. They feel they're exempt. Well, that's not the case, because the same examiners who are doing them will be also examining the bigger banks. And there's called the trickle-down effect in examinations, where they'll say, well, we're going to give you satisfactory, but if you were a larger bank, you would get a needs to improve or failing rating because of this, this, and that. So that's important to understand. And, of course, smaller banks will get bigger over time. Another misconception is that banks with current outstanding ratings feel they're going to keep them. That's not the case. It's going to be very hard to get outstanding ratings under the new regime. In fact, if you are a very big bank, over $50 billion, using the Fed's own numbers, none of those banks will get outstanding. So you're removing a lot of the motivation to get an outstanding rating. That's unfortunate. And the percentage of failing banks is going to go from just under 2% to around 10%, an increase of fivefold. So they are going to be much tougher on both ends, more failing banks and fewer outstanding banks, which is a problem because if you think you're going to stay with outstanding, that's not going to happen.
The next area I'd like you to address would be the assessment areas in the final rule, and that's always been an important point, even I think in the prior rule. So tell us more about that.
Sure. Under the current regs, and by the way, the question I get asked a lot is, what would Senator Proxmire think about these new regs? My answer is, I don't think he would like them. I don't know what he would say, but I can tell you for sure he liked the existing regs we did in 95 because he liked three separate tests for loans, investments, and services, 50, 25, and 25% respectively. Those are bank functions, key functions. And he said, let the banks decide the type of loans, the type of investments, and the type of services they want to give the communities, dependent upon those community needs, to meet all of their needs, especially those in low and moderate income areas. That made sense. The new regs are going a step beyond that, and they are looking at where banks are making retail versus community development loans, which is a 50-50 split. Retail versus community development services, again, a 50-50 split, which in my mind doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the biggest concern is they're going from one facility-based assessment area, which is what we have now around our current branches, to an area which we call a retail lending assessment area or a broader area nationwide outside of that. So they are looking everywhere where banks make loans. Now, this is a very important distinction. Senator Proxmire was concerned that banks take deposits from a community, and we insure those through FDIC, And in return for that insurance and other benefits, you will make loans back into those communities. You will serve those communities, not to 100% loan to deposit, but at least 50, 60%, whatever. But the rest, you do what you want with. Under the current regs, they're going to look at every loan you make everywhere. So if it's in your local facility area, they'll look at that. And if it's in a different state or across the country, they're going to look at it. And they're going to evaluate every loan, no matter where it is, and give you a rating. And that, to me, is credit allocation. And why do I say that? Because when the Fed attacked Senator Proxmire back in 1975, 76, 77, when he was trying to get this passed, this was Arthur Burns, you recall, they said, we do not like CRA because it's going to be credit allocation. Well, it never was. But what the Fed is doing now, and the Fed is really behind this interagency rule, this is really credit allocation. And I will leave you with this final thought. The Community Reinvestment Act, which was focused on reinvestment, CRA, the middle name of reinvestment, we can now think of it as the Community Reallocation Act, because let's just even say Credit Reallocation Act, because they are reallocating credit. This is truly credit allocation, something we never wanted, the Fed never wanted, but now it's going to exist.
Well, thank you, Ken, for the good news. I think in the next episode we'll address, well, what does a bank actually do about the rule? How do they manage to get through this? And the timing as well, because there's effective dates that are going to be involved. And so thank you for this, and we'll rejoin shortly on the second episode.
Thank you.